Welcome to another episode of our podcast, Let's Talk TriDelta. Thanks for joining us today. I am Mindy Tucker, TriDelta's VP of Marketing and Communications, and I'm managing editor of our wonderful Trident magazine. March is St. Jude month for TriDelta. And so for this next series of podcasts, we are going to highlight this partnership that we have with this amazing organization at St. Jude. It first began back in 1999. We've been going 20 years now. So we're going to be talking to some of our sisters and special guests who help show kind of a different aspect each of our commitment and our relationship with St. Jude. While TriDelta's commitment to ending childhood cancer does go all the way back to the 1940s, this 20-year partnership with St. Jude has become such an integral part of TriDelta and our collegiate member experience. And so I'm really excited to sort of delve into this and spend a little time talking about this partnership and bringing it to life for everybody. So far, we have raised $71 million for the kids and families of St. Jude in support of their mission to find cures and save children. And it's definitely something that I know all TriDeltas are so proud of as we work to passionately serve others, that we have this amazing philanthropy partnership and that we're able to do so much good for so many people. So as this partnership has grown, TriDelta and St. Jude have also kind of become a family. And we have members who are patients. We have employees at St. Jude who have become honor initiates. And our two organizations really have some fun connections. And today we're going to talk to one of those. Joining us is a former St. Jude patient and our TriDelta sister, Hillary Husband. Hillary is a 3-time cancer survivor. She was first diagnosed in 2008. And I'm so proud to have her here with us and have her share her St. Jude story and her journey with TriDelta. Hillary, welcome. Thanks for being with us today.
Hey, thanks, Mindy.
So your journey as a cancer survivor and sort of a spokesperson, so to speak, for St. Jude began around 10 years ago in 2008. You want to share with our listeners kind of a little bit about your story and how that journey began?
Sure. So I was a freshman in high school down in Southwest Louisiana, where I'm from. And, you know, I was in the dance team. I was like one of those straight A, like overachieving kind of borderline annoying, drive your parents crazy kids, you know? I mean, ask my mom, like I was the kid that would argue for like the extra 2 points, you know, 95 and 97 on a test, you know, like, so,
I love it. I love it, you know, TriDelta from the beginning. I love it.
Absolutely. And then, so, you know, and, I would have a healthy kid, like barely ever had to go to the doctor. Just like a great childhood and like nothing invincible, of course, cause I was 14. Because every teenager thinks that they're completely invincible. Sure. And, sometimes I think I'm invincible too, but you know, whatever. And then I was at a dance audition and I guess it was right after spring break. And so I'd been up all night, like playing Guitar Hero. And, so I'd noticed that I'd been like bruising and like maybe kind of, I thought I was gaining weight, but I was actually just like swelling from, you know, okay, what was going on inside. And I was at the audition and I passed out. And I called my mom and I never, ever, ever called my parents to have them pick me up from dance. And so they like rushed up there and they were like, we're bringing you to the ER. And I was so embarrassed. I was texting my friends like, oh my gosh, mom's bringing me to the emergency room because of what happened to dance today.
My parents are overreacting. Yeah.
I know. This is so embarrassing. I'll see you tomorrow. You know what I mean? Like it was, yeah. I was so embarrassed. Yeah. And it turned out, so I got to the local hospital and they sent me to, they were like, we don't really know what's going on. Her blood counts are crazy. So they sent me up to LSU Shreveport, which is a St. Jude affiliate I would come to know. And that night they diagnosed me with acute lymphoblastic leukemia, which is the most common form of childhood cancer. And the first one that St. Jude really went after in 1962.
Okay.
And so that's how I was diagnosed. And it's funny now. It wasn't funny then. I was diagnosed on April Fool's Day. So that's really great being 14.
Good that you can joke about that now.
Oh yeah. And I'm like, hey guys, I have cancer. They're like, that's a horrible joke. I'm like, it would be, you know?
Yeah.
But, that's always kind of funny now. So I was at this hospital in Shreveport the next morning. A doctor came in. And he was a St. Jude doctor. I came to learn and he started telling me all the reasons why I should go to St. Jude. And then about half an hour later, he took a breath, right? So he just went on and on and on about how amazing it was and why it was like the absolute best place for me to be treated. And so, within like 24 hours, I was on a plane and I was there. So that's what it was like being diagnosed the first time, but like coming in the hospital for the first time I will never, ever, ever forget. So I had deteriorated pretty quickly in those 24 hours because I had, again, invincible me had waited until the very last minute to go see a doctor about anything or admit anything was wrong. So at that point I was going downhill pretty quickly. I just remember getting wheeled through the front doors at the hospital and a security guard approaching me and just saying, "You must be Hillary. We've been expecting you." And like, there was just like this whole burden that was lifted off my mom and I's shoulders. That was like, okay, they're going to take care of me. They're here for me. So that was the first time I was diagnosed, and that started a three year treatment. So that went all through my high school. I finished chemo in December of 2010 and graduated in May of 2011 and went off to college to pursue a chemistry degree. And about 2 months into my freshman year, I was diagnosed a second time. So that time it was just that I was having shortness of breath. I thought I was getting the freshman 15. Like I couldn't walk upstairs and I couldn't, I mean, without having to stop or walking across campus was hard. And I was sleeping all the time. And I just thought that was what happened when you went to college.
I mean, Yes.
You just get old, right? I mean, I don't know. I thought I was old then. But I went to the ER and, they said I had walking pneumonia. They tried antibiotics. It didn't get any better. And so they did a chest x-ray and they found this, brick-sized mass that was sitting on my heart and my airway, which explains why I couldn't breathe very well. Sure. It was pretty intrusive. And I was at a local ER at this point in the ICU and they were just arguing over my bed. Like, what do we do? Like, what does she have? Is it a fungus? Is it a cancer? Like, what is it? And I just told them, just please send me to St. Jude. They'll know what to do. I wasn't stable to fly, but they did go ahead and life flight me there as soon as they could. And so St. Jude got a life flight arranged within like 2 hours. I mean, which is crazy to get like a medical transfer like that in that short period of time.
So that kind of brings up, I think, one of the things that people don't realize is like once you're a St. Jude patient, you're kind of always a St. Jude patient. So.
Oh, absolutely. I was 18 years old at this point.
You know, you could go back.
Oh, of course. I mean, I was 18 for this diagnosis. And then, you know, 2 years later I relapsed and they took me back again, like no question.
Yeah.
So that is amazing that you never have to worry about whether or not they're just going to, I mean, they care about each and every one of us for the rest of our lives.
Right. So, okay. So that happened when you were 18 and then you said 2 years later.
Yeah. So, I was, diagnosed a third time. So I had gone back to school after the second diagnosis and I was diagnosed a third time. So the second one was a non-Hodgkin lymphoma. And then this third one was a T-cell leukemia. So kind of like the first one, but a more aggressive form of it.
Okay.
To come back. So that was three diagnoses.
And so when you were treated the third time, how did that end and how are you now?
Right. So because I had had such like an aggressive, it was my third occurrence, right? So like the first time didn't keep it away. The second time didn't keep it away. And so now we're on round three, in true Tri-Delta fashion. They said, I know, right? It's kind of Karen White told me that one time. She's like, you always were meant to be a Tri-Delta, but don't ever do that again. Right.
Right. So, stop doing this kind of thing.
Three is your stopping point. They, said that I would need a bone marrow transplant, which what that means is that I would need a donor and they would essentially wipe out my bone marrow, wipe out my immune system and replace it with somebody else's. It is like kind of a shortened way of saying that's bone marrow transplant does. Like, as you can imagine, that's like hugely expensive. Absolutely. Very intensive. It's about a month and a half stay in the hospital, but they have this amazing bone marrow transplant floor, that the Tri-Deltas funded and it's beautiful and colorful and huge rooms. Like there's like video gaming systems, room service. I mean, everything you can imagine, nothing, you wouldn't expect anything less from Tri-Delta or St. Jude. So, it made it a really pleasant place to, if you had to stay somewhere in the hospital for a month and a half, it was a pretty good place to be. I spent 42 days there and then I think 42, 43. And then, I went home after my like post transplant care in November of 2013. And I started college back in January of 2014. And I finished my chemistry degree at, where I was going to college. And then, I'm in grad school at Louisiana Tech University, where I currently am in my third year of my PhD in biomedical engineering. So.
Well, we're glad that you are healthy at the moment. Yeah. And, there's so much to get into here because now there's so many.
I know.
Tri-Delta. I love that you mentioned the bone marrow floor. I want to go back to, you know, you're 14. you spent the last part of your childhood sick. And I'm just wondering, like, what perspective, what do you think you learned from that? How did that change your life as a teenager battling cancer? What did you carry with you?
What do I carry with me?
What do you think that did for you or sort of left with you going forward?
Well, you know, when you're 14, you've been healthy your whole life. Like I was like a pretty average, like normal kid. And that was worried about, you know, Friday night football. I was worried about, you know, like my hair, my makeup, like I was wearing the right stuff, you know, right. You know what I mean? Which is, I know I say it now and I'm like, gosh, that's so trivial. My body image is like, you know, you're going through puberty, like the hormones are crazy, sure. You know, and you just care so much about like what people think about you and how you look. And then, you know, I lost that, like my hair fell out, like my body didn't look like my body anymore. I came to kind of realize that I was still me, even though like I didn't look the same.
Right.
And so that sort of gave me this perspective that like, you don't know what people are going through. There might be a reason, you know what I mean? And so it just gave me this perspective. What people look like isn't who people are. Right. And I think that's like a big thing about with Tri-Delta that I love about Tri-Delta is that like, you know, you look at the inner character of the outward appearance of someone.
Yeah.
And so that's something that really was really driven home to me, you know, kind of going through that now and knowing that now. So I kind of had to be broken down to have that built back up in me. But, I really feel like I have, I don't know, just like a better perspective on what's important, in that case. And then, you know, missing out on, a lot of things in high school, like, you know, I missed a lot of school. I missed a lot of, dance. I really kind of learned the value of like friendship. Right. So the people who it wasn't convenient to be my friend. Right. Cause like sometimes, I mean, I looked different. I, you know, had some disabilities. I wasn't really disabled, but I had like certain things I couldn't eat, certain places I couldn't go. I couldn't be in like large crowds. And so, you know, it was probably not the easiest thing to be my friend, but I made and kept a lot of really good friends. Mm-hmm. And so like, that's what really true friendship is.
Yeah. You probably see that in that time in a way that other people don't.
Right. So like someone said one time, it's like, you know, if you really want to experience love, like get cancer. Right. I mean, cause people are going to either they're either going to run to you or they're going to run from you.
Right.
And with the patients, with the staff at St. Jude, when friends from back home, like just experienced so much genuine love and friendship.
So can you, you know, I've been to St. Jude. It's an incredible experience. You've obviously spent a lot of time there. For people that haven't, can you just give us a little, like, what are one or two things that, from your experience, that just makes St. Jude so special to the people that are treated there?
Well, you know, the first thing, you know, you mentioned earlier how St. Jude is like a family, and it really is. Like my mom always says, like, it doesn't cost anything to be nice, to be kind. Right. And, I think that's something that St. Jude does really well. And in a lot of little ways that really add up. So like, I think about, I guess I would kind of lump this into like one of the things is that like they have, if you're like taking a nap on one of the couches out in the waiting room, waiting for your appointment, there's volunteers that walk around and just like cover you up with a warm blanket. Or there's somebody walking around with like a coffee. I know, right? I mean, walking around with like a coffee cart. I'm still like, if I go to like a hospital waiting room, like, where's my warm blanket, you know? But they, you know, they'll come around with like a coffee cart and like free coffee, hot chocolate. They'll bring a cart around with books or movies or videos or toys or something for, you know, they just kind of give you these little things that kind of make a boring, you know, mundane, not super fun day, just a little bit more homey. And then like, just kind of having the relationship with the staff, it's not like anything I've ever experienced. Like, and they stay, the staff who were, I saw, the gift shop owner, not the owner, the manager, Miss Janice. I'm, you know, you go in there and she's been there for 32 years and she remembers you. And she's like, oh my gosh, I remember when you were 15, you know, and now here you are, you know. And then like the nurses are the same. A lot of the doctors that took care of me when I was a teenager are still there and they want to hear how my life's going. So I'm always excited to come back and be like, hey, guess what? You know, I published a paper, or oh my gosh, guess what? I got engaged, or I got, you know, this award, or look at these pictures I took, you know what I mean? And I just kind of want to, it's like going home to family and getting to show them all the things you've done. So that's really the thing that means like the most to me coming back to St. Jude. It just feels like home.
Yeah. That's amazing. So you, whether you knew it or not, you were surrounded by TriDelta during that whole time. Yeah. I'm curious, now you're a sister, and we'll get to that in a second, but when was the first time that you learned about TriDelta?
Well, funny enough, it really wasn't until I got to St. Jude. I mean, I kind of knew what sororities were, but you know, I just got into high school, and I mean, that really wasn't, college wasn't on my radar. That was very far away. Mm-hmm. All a whole 4 years. And they, you know, I got to the hospital, and as I'm like going around, I see these triangles everywhere, and I kid you not. And so I was like, well, what does this mean? Like, what,
like, what are all those triangles?
I'm like, they're everywhere. They're on the floor. They're on people's shirts. Like, what is this? And so, you know, I come to find out it's this organization of women who raise like tons and tons of money for the hospital. And they're always so nice when they come, and they're so happy to be there, and they're cool. I mean, I was 14. So like these college women, I'm like, wow, they're so cool, because they were always coming through the hospital. There's almost always, even when I go back now for checkups, I'm always just like, where y'all from? You know, like tomorrow there, I'm like, I'm a sister, you know?
I love it.
Even like in the cafeteria, like if I'm wearing like a TriDelta sweatshirt now, they're like, oh, thank you, TriDelta. Like, they're like, we thank you so much for what you guys do. And that's kind of how I felt from the patient end too. I was like, wow, like these women, like, I mean, there's so many of them, and they care about this hospital that's like saving my life, saving my friends' lives. And they're doing such an incredible job of it. Cause I mean, I didn't know exactly at the time, but I mean, I was like, they must be really important if they're here all the time, you know, you know, and I didn't know how much money they were raising, but I knew from as many places that the three triangles were, they're yeah. raising a lot more money than a lot of other places, a lot of other organizations were.
Right.
That's yeah. 14-year-old me's perspective, you know?
Yeah. They must be important. Their triangles are everywhere.
Yeah.
So how later on in life, you happened to come in contact with TriDelta in a very different way and ended up becoming an honor initiate, which is a really special way that we welcome members who are alumni and out of college. And I'm curious how all of that came about.
So it starts with Karen White, as many things do.
So Karen White, for those of you that don't know, Karen White is TriDelta's CEO. And in a yes. former life, she did work at St. Jude. So she knows Hillary
right.
from her experience.
Yes. Yeah, so Karen was, I think, in strategic partnerships at St. Jude. I think she was a VP here. And so when I was 18, so when I came back with the second diagnosis, I would do like speaking engagements for the hospital. Like if like a tour came through, I would like go to the lunch thing and then just like tell my patient story, talk about what St. Jude had done for me and my family. Karen and I got to know each other through that. And she sort of adopted me as like her niece or aunt or sister or whatever, you know what I mean? Or, you know what I mean? So yeah. she kind of like, and so if I was like too sick to go to like an event that, you know, maybe one of the other partners were throwing and there was like a goodie bag, like she'd go down and get one for me and sneak it up to me and be like, no, you were too sick to go, but like, here's like the little goodie bag that they had. And,
yes.
So she and I just got really, really close. And then when she, took the job at TriDelta, I was just like devastated, like, selfishly was devastated that like, I wasn't going to get to see her all the time anymore. But she always just joked that I would be an honorary Delta in her heart. And I was like, okay, I guess that'll be enough, because I ended up going to a school. I'm an undergraduate that did not have Greek life, and I went there for the science program. And so I never initiated any sorority, any organization like that. So I was like, well, I guess being an honorary TriDelta in Karen White's heart is
that'll just have to do.
is the next best thing. It'll have right. to do. And so when I went off to grad school, I remember just walking through the quad, and there was a group of women tabling, and they handed me this little flyer, and it says like, you know, come see us about TriDelta. And I was like, oh, that's funny. I have to tell Karen, you know? And so I took a picture of the flyer and I texted it to her, and I was like, hey, look who I found. And then she said, I have an idea, ... in the text. And I was like, oh no. I was like, oh no. She called me and she's like, well, do you want to be a TriDelta? I was like, Karen, I'm in grad school. Like, I don't know how that works. And she's like, no, we're going to honor initiate you, because they were founding the Louisiana Tech chapter.
Yeah.
And basically they wanted me, I tell my collegiate women all the time that, I was initiated to be your advisor. And they're like, I don't know what that means, but okay. You know? And so, you know, I think she just wanted me to get plugged in with the alums in the area and just have the opportunity to be a TriDelta woman. And I said yes faster than she could finish the sentence.
I love it.
And Yeah. So it was.
And you've alluded to this, but I love that not only did you become an honor initiate and a sister, but you immediately started giving back as an advisor to the Louisiana Tech right. chapter. And how has that experience been for you?
I love it. I absolutely love it. So we have a really, like a really great alumni chapter. So I can't like talk about being an advisor without talking about like the other advisors we have. They're absolutely an amazing group of women that kind of came out of the woodwork around Louisiana Tech, the chapter there. So I'm the, under the pilot structure, it's membership experience advisor. So I guess like the old LMA. So I get to like do all things recruitment, all things membership. And I've just built like such a strong, like, bond with a lot of the collegiate women, like girls who've been women who have been on my team, you know, or just in conversation from like coming in another lodge. That it's been so special. And then like it's cool. Like a lot of the alums are more my parents' age, my mom's age, but like I go over and watch LSU games with them, or we'll go out to eat, or I'll go over there and study, or I'll watch their dog for them. Or it's just kind of given me this friend group that I was missing when I moved to Ruston for grad school. And then, you know, on top of that, you know, being an advisor to an emerging chapter, just the way that I've watched these women like struggle through their growing pains and, you know, lean on the advisor so much at the beginning and then need us less and less. It's just been really cool to watch them come into their own and just kind of being a part of that and being able to support that has been one of the most rewarding things I've ever done, to be honest.
Well, that is... I love hearing, this is such a story of sort of, I don't know, exchange and, you know, mm-hmm. sort of coming around and us serving St. Jude and you coming back and serving Tri-Delta. It's just really an inspirational and amazing story. If you think about the future of Tri-Delta and the future of St. Jude, what are your hopes for that partnership and sort of where it goes from here?
So St. Jude is really, that's a loaded question, by the way.
Yeah.
So I guess starting on the St. Jude side, you know, they're really turning their sights to global cure. Outside of the U.S. is still like down near 20%.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's basically 1962 if you're not in the U.S. And that's not what Danny's dream was, right? Danny Thomas's dream was that no child should die at the dawn of life, not no child should die at the dawn of life in America, right? And I think that kind of matches up with Tri-Delta's mission that we're kind of like to all, not just kind of like to Americans. Right.
Right.
And so I think, I mean, that lines up so beautifully. And I just think that Tri-Delta is from what I've watched since I was 14 and just thought there were triangles everywhere. I have just seen how our fundraising has gotten stronger, more creative, and it's adapted with culture and college enrollment is kind of stagnating and facing all these problems in Greek life. That one of the biggest draws to at least to Tri-Delta is our philanthropy and the strength of our philanthropy, and that we want to be a part of something bigger. And so I think that's just going to get stronger as time goes on. And so I hope that partnership continues to grow tighter and stronger.
Yeah, I know it will. I feel confident it will.
I do too.
For you, you're working on your PhD. What's next for Hillary?
Well, I'm in my third year at Louisiana Tech for grad school. My collegiates won't let me talk about me graduating because we're just not talking about that.
You're not going anywhere, right?
No, sure. And I'm sure I'll just end up, you know, advising or volunteering somewhere else. But, you know, when I graduate, so I worked at St. Jude this past summer as an intern in one of the research labs that was related to my research. Obviously research labs related to my research, right? And I, this next summer I'll be working at Merck in Philadelphia. So I'm just trying to get an idea of like what kind of setting I want to work in. Obviously I would love to work at St. Jude, but I want to give industry a fair shot too.
Sure.
But the field I want to work in, it's called pharmacometrics. And so you focus on like kind of two aspects, and I won't get too far into it, but so pharmacokinetics, which is what the body does for the drug, and then pharmacodynamics, which is what the drug does to the body. And then you look at how like the different ways the drug will interact with the human body or whatever you're looking at. And so that kind of mathematical modeling that I do is really useful in clinical trial design. I hope that I can end up somewhere where I can work on like cancer-related or anti-cancer related, I guess, clinical trial design study execution. So that's sort of where I want to, the space I want to be in when I finish.
Yeah. Everybody, I know everybody listening right now is like feeling and, realizing how much they don't know. You know, really, you're amazing. And I just want to say how lucky we are to have you as part of our sisterhood, and how exciting it is to just sort of hear your story and how it connects back to TriDelta. I think it brings this entire partnership to life, and it brings to life the patients that we don't always know about or get to touch or see or know. And I think it's just really inspirational for all of our members, and love having you in the sisterhood. Love having time talking to you today. Can't thank you enough for joining us. Just really appreciate you giving us a little bit of time to share your story.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. I'm so glad I got to do this.
Well, thank you. We hope everybody out there will help us celebrate TriDelta and St. Jude this month on social media and at tridelta.org and stjude.org, where you can also make a donation to support St. Jude. We'd love to hear from you. You can always email us at podcast@trideltaeo.org. Please like, rate, and subscribe to our podcast. We really, really like 5-star ratings if you're in there and you want to rate us high. Thanks to everybody for being with us and talking TriDelta today. Join us next time and bring you.